TV special.
Yes. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
I'm not the kind of fool who's gonna sit and sing to you about stars, girl. But last night I looked up into the dark half of the blue, and they gone backwards. Something in your magnetism must have pissed them off, forcing them to get an early night. I have been searching from the bottom to the top for such a sight as the one I caught when I saw your fingers dim in the lights, like you're used to being told that you're true. Spends all night stuck on a puzzle. Nobody I asked knew how we came to be the one to whom you surrendered. Any man who wasn't led away into the other room pretending. But something in your magnetism hadn't just made him drop. Whoever's hand it was that he was holding. I have been searching from the bottom to the top for such a sight as the one I caught when I saw your fingers dim. You're used to being told that you're true, and I spend all night stuck on a puzzle. I've tried to swim to the side, but my feet got caught.
That's brand new solo music from Alex Turner of the Arctic Monkeys and the Last Shadow Puppets. That song's called Stuck on the Puzzle, and that's from the new British film called Submarine, and he's released a 5-track EP of original music that he's done for that British film. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 213B from Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Cramming in all the things we couldn't cram into last week's cram-packed episode. And unless you've been living under a rock, you may notice that there's a lot going on in the world. So there's a lot to cover on all the sites and all of the shows and all of the things that I'm proud enough to be a part of, and the passion for this brings it out. We're going to blast through some of the alternative media from Food World Order and Cyberspace War, but first, let's go through some of the closely connected alternative media. First up, latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, episode 69, Radioactive America, Fashion Police, FBI's UFOs. That's right. Those three main stories we are going to get into in a little bit greater detail in the upcoming episode 214. But the first one, U.S. unprepared for nuclear emergency. Story two, France starts ban on full face veil. And story number three, alien psyops and memos from the FBI vault. All that and so much more in the latest amazing episode of New World Next Week. Again, huge thanks and hat tip to all the hard work from James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. His latest episode, 181, Arab Spring and World War III. There's been much celebration about the freedom fever spreading across the Middle East, but is there a larger agenda at play? Episode 181, Arab Spring and World War III, examines the destabilization happening in these people's revolutions and the steps, of course, toward confrontation with China and Russia, because that's ultimately what it seems to be about. Everything else is playing the ends against the middle, ultimately on the road as we move the pieces on the grand chessboard. I saw brand new interviews coming out even this morning from James Corbett, interviews with Jesse Trinidou involved in the Oklahoma City case. Of course, the anniversary of that right around the corner. Interviews with Bob Chapman and so much more. And of course, the Sunday update videos and all the amazing work from CorbettReport.com. The most recent episode I have posted from PeaceRevolution.org is episode 22, The Best Enemies Money Can Buy, The Arch Which Connects Two Pillars. I'm a little behind on my Peace Revolution episodes, and I'm on episode 21, and it was already blowing my mind, and I'll reference some of that again in the upcoming episode 214. But in the case of all of these shows that we take the time to mention each week whenever there's a new episode, I implore you to go check these episodes out and subscribe. And of course, yes, it has begun. My man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org has begun his new five-night-a-week show on KXL 101.1 FM and 750 AM here in Portland, Oregon. Kicked off this last Monday, April 11th. And appropriately enough, it all began with the arrival that day. Saw the release of this story about the FBI vault and supposed new memos concerning supposed aliens and unidentified flying objects. Now, amazingly enough, so far, Clyde has put up a new article each day to go along with each episode of the week, and we've added those to the main posting, Ground Zero reappearing on KXL, the arrival, and the KXL kickoff. And I also saw some of those new episodes coming through the feed set up on groundzeromedia.org that was already feeding out the previous shows that were on KUFO. I guess what I'm trying to stress in all of these situations is if you stay subscribed to the feed, you won't miss a thing. Put it into Google Reader, put it into iTunes, you'll get articles, you'll get PDFs, you'll get audio, you'll get video, everything. Let's move to the latest that I have on cyberspacewar.com. And again, as always, huge thanks to Alan in Omaha for taking over some of the main duties, writing and posting tons of original great material on Cyberspace War. And we'll begin with the singularity. The singularity is drawing near. That's according to futurist Ray Kurzweil, who fervently believes machines will make us immortal. Singularity, a mathematician's wet dream where exponential iterations of computer artificial intelligence results in super-intelligent, sapient machines. Werner Wing, computer scientist and sci-fi writer, popularized the term with his 1993 article, The Coming Technological Singularity, How to Survive in the Post-Human Era. It is this intersection where machine overtakes man when things get weird. This article goes on and also contains links, and you can watch Charlie Rose of the Council on Foreign Relations interview Ray Kurzweil with director Barry Ptolemy about their, at the time, recent film, Transcendent Man, the singularity, the cyborg. We also have a post concerning some of the recent radar rings, Dutch synths. Is it another lay observer falling prey, as not only Clyde Lewis has mentioned recently, but James Corbett has mentioned recently, the knee-jerk response to blame any type of weather situation on harp? The High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project. We also have a nice April Fool's hoax, as yes, we're digging back and catching up on some of the things we haven't been able to cover on the live weekly episodes. And again, here we're recording the B-side, so no time constraints. The Daily Galaxy and others ran a fairly elaborate hoax claiming that China declared first contact. And I felt compelled to add the note that, yes, it was an April Fool's joke after the page got comments saying, you know, this is fake, right? It does get difficult in this day and age to tell the difference from The Onion and one of those other channels. You know, we've been following the X-37B and all the secret shuttle flights. There's more going on as well. Falcon Heavy to lift off in 2013. Are launch costs too high and weighing down your bottom line? Elon Musk, SpaceX founder, pitches his Falcon Heavy booster as right for the job to lift your prospects. In a recent Discovery News article, Musk says, quote, "We can realistically start to contemplate missions like a Mars sample return, which requires a tremendous amount of lift capability because you have to send a lander to Mars that still has enough propellant to return to Earth." The Planetary Science blog notes that Falcon Heavy is second only to the Saturn V or Saturn V rocket in payload and escape velocity. The sales pitch is, of course, a familiar one. More bang for the buck. Black Triangles, United States Air Force top secret nuclear-powered flying triangles, the TR-3B. An interesting article getting into that, and I'll mention, of course, we're set up and connected through all the social networks. Friend Face and Jitter and all of those. And I basically have it set up to where everything from the Media Monarchy Kingdom gets posted over to Facebook automatically. But it doesn't do it in real time, and it sometimes ploops out big chunks of stuff that I'm sure makes people hit the hide button. But because it's sending out things from all of my different sites, not just myself from Media Monarchy, I get folks saying, hey, what was that crazy thing? Hey, what was that other thing you put up? And sometimes I go, what? I didn't do that. And I realize, oh, it's coming from Holy Hexes or Food World Order or, in this case, Cyberspace War. And I have had folks say, yeah, that's the stuff I like. I want to see the space stuff and the alien stuff. So there it is. And again, hopefully we're building the Media Monarchy Kingdom to cover all those kind of different areas. And as I've said over the last several months, as we're trying to kind of build a home team, if you will, to kind of man these sites so they can all be somewhat autonomous and I can turn over the keys of the kingdom. But furthermore, on cyberspacewar.com, a quick note from Danger Room. Hologram goggles on the drawing board. Noah Shackman gets it right. Death from above on demand. In the article, DARPA's hologram goggles will unleash hell. And the company? Vuzix, V-U-Z-I-X, an eyewear company given $1 million to develop a display where a computer tracks where the soldier wearing the display is viewing. It's a brave new world. Lastly, on Cyberspace War, we'll pick up last week's DEF CON, and that's what we call it when we post up just a list of headlines, such as we call it the News Purge on Media Monarchy or the Binge and Purge on Food World Order. Comets, Condé, attacks, and accidents. Or we could make the portmanteau of attacks-idents, if you like. The comet Elenin may produce the greatest meteor showers in history. An article from Terrence Iam on Helium. The unusual comet Elenin, that's L-E, or rather E-L-E-N-I-N, is expected to pass within 21 million miles of Earth on October 16th, 2011, and speeding by at more than 85,000 miles per hour, so fast it could travel from Earth to the moon in less than 5 hours. Elenin. Mark it in your calendar. An interesting note, and from the same writer on Helium, NASA admits all previous warming trends caused by the sun. Can that be true? Under mounting pressure from scientists that reject the politically popularized man-made global warming and climate models, the anthropogenic global warming theory, the American Space Agency NASA has admitted that all past warming trends were driven by solar activity. As more scientists have joined the outcry over the politicization of Earth's climate cycles, the number currently exceeds 20-plus thousand, promoters of the AGW model have denounced the global warming deniers, countering that little evidence supports the view that the sun is driving the observed warming trend. Now, however, a new study released from NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, measuring the global temperature variance during the past 100 years has found the sun's heat and variable cycles have indeed made a significant, measurable impact and greatly influenced Earth's climate. In fact, the influence extends as far back as the Industrial Revolution. Goddard's research shows that the solar cycle's ups and downs directly affect the temperatures and long-term climate. It's well known that the sun passes through cycles of 11-year and 22-year intensities. Currently, the sun is on the upswing towards solar maximum when sunspot activity and solar flares will peak. The height of the maximum is expected during 2012-2013. And the article goes on to note how the Earth is actually now cooling. Meanwhile, down the DEF CON, Google is making an app that would identify people's faces, and that should be no surprise. We've noted that before, and we already have Kinect and all the other biometric platforms that are already out there and already being tested on video game lovers. Politico asks, is Google online piracy public enemy number one? And an article from MyCentralOregon.com, to boost innovation, Facebook opens server designs, and the new one in Prineville, Oregon, the Prineville, Oregon Facebook data center, 38% more energy efficient and 24% cheaper to build. Facebook opened that up as a way to sort of brag. A listener sent me this article from eWeek.com. Epsilon breach, a treasure trove for phishing attacks. While the Epsilon data breach differs from other recent breaches in that there are no credit card numbers, social security numbers, or corporate secrets, the threat of phishing attacks is all too real, and this is much too large a story to get into, but I believe I did see an update that said, we're going to investigate this Epsilon breach. Studio suing BitTorrent pirates doesn't even own the movie they're suing over. Record show that from Threat Level. Ars Technica reporting on the anonymous attacks on Sony to protest the PS3 hacker lawsuit. Meanwhile, the Condé Nast magazine empire got hooked in an $8 million phishing scam. And a story you would think would be from The Onion is in fact from The Guardian. The Georgian woman, and that's not in the United States, cuts off web access to the whole of Armenia. And it was an accident. Entire country loses internet for 5 hours after a 75-year-old woman slices through cable while scavenging for copper. As Georgia provides 90% of Armenia's internet, the woman's unwitting sabotage had catastrophic consequences. Kill switch indeed. So we referenced The Onion, and here it is. The Onion digitizing their archives, Area Man stoked. So they're basically digitizing all their super oldies, because they started in Madison in 1988 with newspapers distributed on campus. And I would say, as you would probably know if you listen to Media Monarchy at all, that we frequently cite and reference and play clips from The Onion because the satire is so cutting. There's really nothing else like it. The last note on Cyberspace War is an update to this 4-7 DEF CON Comets Conde attacks. U.S. to use Facebook and Twitter to announce new terrorism warnings to the public. This posted April 7th from the Associated Press. Terror alerts from the U.S. government will soon have just two levels of warnings, elevated and imminent. And those will be relayed to the public only under certain circumstances. Color codes are out, as we reported to you months ago. Facebook and Twitter will sometimes be in, according to a Homeland Security draft obtained by the Associated Press. Some terror warnings could be withheld from the public if announcing a threat would risk exposing an intelligence operation or an ongoing investigation, according to the government's confidential plan. Like a carton of milk, the new terror warnings will each come with a stamped expiration date. The new system, replacing the five color-coded levels, is expected to be in place by April 27th. And, of course, we should take extra note of some terror warnings could be withheld from the public if announcing a threat would risk exposing an intelligence operation or an ongoing investigation. Those are both reasons used for not stopping who would become the alleged 9/11 hijackers. Visa workers at the consulate in Jeddah were told, yeah, we know. We know their terror designation. That's their cover, and they're part of an ongoing investigation. We'll turn for the remainder of this B-side episode 213 from Media Monarchy to foodworldorder.com. And we'll start with last week's Binge and Purge, Easter Grocer Toxic Addiction, Oregon Salmonella Case Brings Easter Chick Warning. That's from the Barf blog. And yes, another amazing first for Oregon. The season's first baby chick-related salmonella case has been recorded in a Deschutes County, Oregon resident. Yes, my friends, Easter is coming very soon. And, of course, we'll have more on that on the upcoming episode. As long as we're discussing my home state in the People's Republic of Oregon, we can grab a quick blip from Oregon Public Radio. BPA ban advances in Oregon's legislature.
The problem is that not all parents know about the risks of BPA. And the children of those parents are no less deserving of protection than the children of parents that know what those risks are.
North Portland grocer charged with food stamp fraud. That's from the Oregonian, but on around the country and world from allgov.com. Trouble in the bat world means trouble for U.S. food supply. Meanwhile, from the BBC, 14 die after eating toxic sardines in Madagascar. And an interesting piece from the Los Angeles Times, processed food from stone tools to TV dinners, where they note food technology has pretty much been bad for human health for thousands of years. So what's a little transgenic, genetically modified organisms unlabeled for you? Discovery reporting on food obsession similar to drug addiction. And the last note on this, Binge and Purge, food prices pause before resuming their climb. That is from the Globe and Mail. And we turn now to a story we covered on the previous episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, episode 68. Modified milk. Genetically modified cows produce human milk. This article from The Telegraph is posted on foodworldorder.com. We have supplemental links to Fox, to the New York Daily News, to Express out of the UK. And I went over this story again on New World Next Week. We also discussed it on my recent appearance on the IntelHubRadio.com, where I'm going to become a recurring guest the first Wednesday of every month on the IntelHubRadio.com, thanks to OracleBroadcasting.com. So I've gone into this story several times, so I won't do it yet again here, except to note the recent comment posted anonymously where they note, "It is unnatural to drink mother's milk once weaned. It is completely unnatural to drink cow's milk. It is insane to drink GM cow's milk, no matter how much it tastes like human milk." GMOs linked to organ disruption in 19 studies. This from responsibletechnology.org. A new paper shows that consuming genetically modified corn or soybeans leads to significant organ disruptions in rats and mice, particularly in livers and kidneys. By reviewing data from 19 different animal studies, Professor Gilles Eric Seralani and others reveal that 9% of the measured parameters, including blood and urine, biochemistry, organ weights, and microscopic analysis, were significantly disrupted in the GM-fed animals. The kidneys of males fared the worst. And they note, and we quote from the report published in Environmental Sciences Europe, on March 1st of 2011, quote, "Several convergent data appear to indicate liver and kidney problems as endpoints of GMO diet effects," end quote. They also note other organs may be affected too, such as the heart and spleen or blood cells. The GM soybean and corn varieties used in the feeding trials constitute 83% of the commercialized GMOs that are currently being consumed by billions of people. While the findings may have serious ramifications for the human population, the authors demonstrate how a multitude of GMO-related health problems could easily pass undetected through the superficial and largely incompetent safety assessments that are used around the world. From NBC New York, not com. NBCNewYork.com reporting on No Fries for You as New York City Health Department workers balk at the new rules.
It is moving day for workers at the city's health department, and as they prepare to move into the new Queens digs, the agency's nearly 3,000 workers have been handed this strict set of workplace guidelines regulating everything from what they can eat to what kind of perfume they wear. At meetings and parties, only beverages with less than 25 calories can be served, and deep-fried foods are off-limits. Department officials cite the need to lead by example. Health Commissioner Thomas Farley has recently been pushing to reduce New Yorkers' salt and sugar intake.
Now, you may recall several months ago when I mentioned I was quite glad that my workplace started a ban on perfumes and fragrances. But here we see, just as in so many cases, the slippery slope of the nanny state. Frankenfoods in your natural food store? Whole foods or whole hypocrisy from organicconsumers.org. After two decades of biotech bullying by Monsanto and Food Inc., a grassroots movement of organic consumers and farmers is rising up across the United States. Inspired by the success of their European counterparts in driving genetically engineered crops and foods off the market, not through an EU ban but through mandatory labeling, several thousand protesters took to the streets on March 26 in 30 different cities under the banner of Rally for the Right to Know and Millions Against Monsanto. At the same time, anti-GMO activists have stepped up the pace of grassroots lobbying, successfully pressuring state legislatures in at least 14 states to introduce bills calling for mandatory labeling of genetically engineered foods. Reflecting a widespread public concern over the health and environmental hazards of GMOs, recent polls by NPR and MSNBC have found that more than 90% of Americans support mandatory labeling. Mandatory labeling of GMOs, of course, is bitterly opposed by Monsanto and the supermarket lobby, who understand, as a Monsanto executive admitted, quote, "If you put a label on genetically engineered food, you might as well put a skull and crossbones on it." Angered by the Obama administration's recent controversial approvals of GMO alfalfa and salmon and sugar beets and corn and the compromise or surrender of organic industry leaders, including Whole Foods, Stonyfield Farms, and Organic Valley, In agreeing to accept the coexistence of GMO and organic crops and foods, organic consumers across the U.S. have decided to take matters into their own hands. Spearheaded by the industry watchdog group, the Organic Consumers Association, and powerful alternative health consumer networks such as NaturalNews.com and Mercola.com, millions of health and environmentally minded consumers are starting to demand that the $60 billion natural, quote-unquote, products industry take GMO products off their shelves, or at least clearly label them so that consumers can seek certified, organic, and other GMO-free alternatives. Again, that's from organicconsumers.org, and I love that they mention Mercola and naturalnews.com. I love to see great organizations that may sometimes seem disparate start to get together. Our final note on this episode comes from the 414 Binge and Purge posted up last night on foodworldorder.com, Hunger Hormones and the Danger Zone. The first from businessweek.com, hormone helps you sniff out food, study finds. And this just kind of reminds me, of course, the cartoons where you see the stink lines and you're picked up and drawn towards the food. Maybe, in a way, Chuck Jones and those guys were onto something. From the Telegraph, arsenic and toxic metals found in baby foods. Meanwhile, Greens call for a New Zealand ban on Japanese food imports. Monsanto modifies soybeans to grow fish oil. Natural News reporting on the extreme weather that's taken a huge toll on global food production. Meanwhile, ABC out of Australia notes that the World Bank chief says food prices are in the danger zone. That would be Zelik. And the final note on here comes from the economiccollapseblog.com. 20 signs that a horrific global food crisis is coming. Let's mention a few of them. According to the aforementioned World Bank, 44 million people around the globe have been pushed into extreme poverty since last June because of rising food prices. Due to ethanol subsidies, almost a third of all corn grown in the United States is now used for fuel. This, of course, puts a lot of stress on the price of corn. Due to a lack of water, some countries in the Middle East find themselves forced to almost totally rely on other nations for basic food staples. For example, it's being projected that there will be no more wheat production in Saudi Arabia by 2012. And, of course, we also have the systematic depletion of the Oglala Aquifer, which could eventually turn America's breadbasket back into the Dust Bowl. So many other notes on here concerning tsunamis and the Japanese economy and skyrocketing oil prices, wheat prices, corn, soybean, orange juice, all of those things. And they even end with a note that some of the larger emergency storable food outlets are discussing being sold out. That's going to do it, my friends, for this B-side episode 213 from Media Monarchy. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Of course, we also run FoodWorldOrder.com, CyberspaceWar.com, HolyHexes.com. Coming soon from Media Monarchy and TragedyAndHope.com, NavigatingNetflix.com. And, of course, our weekly series with Corbett Report, NewWorldNextWeek.com, and, as I mentioned just a little bit ago, first Wednesday of every month appearing on the IntelHubRadio.com. Our upcoming episode 214 is quite jam-packed with media. And I've been quite redundant in saying jam-packed, and media might seem quite redundant as well, but we're going to get into everything from Sidney Lumet and Network and the Coachella concert this weekend and Star Suckers and state-run radio and the royal ritual so many other things coming very soon. So the way we'll end this episode, we'll set up the upcoming episode where we will discuss bands and musicians taking over the soundtracks of motion pictures. And we'll reference the Chemical Brothers in that story coming up. So we'll go out on this episode 213B with brand new music from the Chemical Brothers on their new original score to Hannah. This is The Devil in the Beats. Take care.
Music, a combination of sounds with a view to beauty of form and expression of emotion.
Would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.